discover the tips and strategies that will help you achieve your retirement goals. I'm your host, James Knoll, and this is the podcast dedicated to helping you retire well. It all starts right here on Ready for Retirement. Welcome back to another episode of Ready for Retirement. I'm your host, James Knoll. Today's episode is all about 529 plans and specifically how to most effectively withdraw money from 529 plans. So we will give a general overview just for those of you who aren't familiar, how do 529 plans work? But the major focus of today's episode will be as college is approaching, what's the most effective way to draw money from those accounts, especially in the light of ups and downs of the market. Now, this episode is based upon a listener question. This listener's name is Sherry. And Sherry says this. She says, "Hi, James, I really enjoy your show. You are skilled at breaking the concepts down into easily digestible bites. When I found you last year, I binge listened to every episode." Thank you, Sherry. She then goes on to say, "We have a 529 plan question. We try to front load it as much as possible, so we haven't contributed much in many years. Normally, we are boring buy and hold investors of passive index funds. However, my son, who will be a freshman in the fall of 2022, so we will need the funds shortly. College will be approximately $40,000 per year. The current balance is $149,000. December of 2021, the balance was $158,000. With the world so uncertain right now and the funds needed so soon, would you cash out the balance or half of the balance to hold in a money market fund to avoid any additional losses? The investment is a Fidelity 2021 age-based portfolio with a 15% bond to 85% stock portfolio. Thank you for any insight. I'm sure a lot of other 2022 parents are wondering the same thing." End question. And yes, I can see exactly, Sherry, where that question is coming from. There's this sense of, yes, we're going to invest and we're going to weather the ups and downs, but this isn't just an indefinite time horizon anymore. We have college coming up, and as of this recording, this will be in 2 or 3 months potentially when tuition begins. How do we think about that? With the markets down, do we sell now? Do we wait it out? How do we most effectively draw funds from our account? Now, one thing that I'll mention is, Sherry, you mentioned that the 2021 age-based portfolio is 15% bonds, 85% stock. My guess, I haven't checked on this particular fund. I guess I could do that real quick, but my guess is it's switched. 2021 portfolio, not just from Fidelity, but from any institution, would likely have much more in bonds and cash than it would in stocks. And I mention that because that would be an important thing to note. Is this an 85% stock portfolio that you need to begin using in the next 2-3 months here? Or is it an 85% bond portfolio that you're going to begin drawing from in the next 2 to 3 months or so? So my guess, my assumption as we walk through this is that it's actually flipped more bonds than stocks, because that does matter and that will play a role in some of the feedback or some of the framework that you're looking at as you go through this. But that's the first thing to note. Now, for people who aren't familiar, let me just do a quick overview. What a 529 plan is when you are saving for college, you could save that in a regular investment account or a saving account, or you could save money to a 529 plan. Any contributions you make to a 529 plan, you do not get any federal tax deductions for them. You may get some state tax deductions depending on the state that you live in. I'm in California. California, for example, does not offer any deductions on your state income tax return for using a California state-run 529 plan. But as you're looking at it, the real tax benefits aren't for the money you put in. It's as that money grows, it grows completely tax-free. And if you're pulling the money out for qualified higher education expenses, that money comes out tax-free as well. That can include things like tuition, books, room and board, supplies, other things like that. It can be included for trade school. It can be used for junior college. It can now be used for K through 12. So there's a whole lot of flexibility in how you use it. But what you need to be sure of is that it's for qualified higher education purposes. So there's a lot of other details around 529 plans, how they can best be used, the rules around them, what about other withdrawals that aren't used for qualified higher education expenses. I'm going to save that for another episode. Today's episode is specifically around how do you most effectively take this money out? And let's look at both Sherry's individual situation to apply it here. But let's also talk more broadly for everyone else listening as well. Because here's the situation Sherry is in, where school is going to cost $40,000 per year. So do some quick math before factoring in inflation of cost of education. That's $160,000 total. In December of 2021, the balance of her 529 plan was $158,000 per year. So she's in a really great spot. She put herself in a really great spot where the balance of the account was almost just enough, if you did a little bit of growth on that, to fully fund all of college without having to come out of pocket for anything else. So that was the case in December of 2021, but then 2022 happened. And for the first few months so far at 2022, the market has pulled back. And as the market has pulled back, now her 529 plan balance is $149,000. So her question, she's saying, look, I know we're not trying to time the market, but I don't have just an indefinite period of time until I need to access these funds. I can't just sit on these funds forever waiting for them to recover. There's a very real payment coming up, and I need to know what to do with that. So here's how I would approach this. Number one, I'm going to save $150,000 in the plan, just to use a nice round number. And I would ask you this, Sherry, or I'd ask you this, anyone who's in a similar place. If you had $150,000 in cash within the 529 plan, would you choose to invest that into the balance it's invested in currently, or would you keep that in cash? Now I'd pause, because that's really the way that we need to think about this. Yes, that money's invested today, but you could go to cash today. The hard part about that is then there's the emotional implications of, oh my gosh, I'm selling when the fund is down. Now, thankfully, because this fund is more conservative, if the balance was $158,000 in December and it's $149,000 today, it's not gotten hit as hard as a fully stock invested portfolio would have. So that's why it is important to get more conservative as you get closer to needing some of these funds. But still, that's a $9,000 difference. That's 25% of 1 year's tuition almost. So it's not an inconsequential amount of money. The hard part about selling is you are locking in that loss for at least a portion of your funds. But the way I would approach it was I would ask you, Sherry, again, let's assume you had $150,000 and it was already in cash in your portfolio. Would you choose to go invest that in the Fidelity 2021 age-based portfolio, or would you keep it in cash? Whatever decision you would make there, that's probably what I would align with, because there's this emotional component, as I mentioned, of not wanting to sell things when they're down, but that can get us into trouble if it then causes us to incur more and more and more losses if the market does continue to fall. So just recognize that choosing to remain invested a certain way is the same in this scenario as having cash and choosing to invest in this fund. All else being equal, they're the same, especially because it's not as if there's any tax implications for selling anything within a 529 plan. You can sell and there's going to be no tax implications for that. Now, there are limits on how frequently you can make changes to the allocation in your 529 plan, but if you're making that one allocation or one adjustment per year, that's well within your limits of what you can do. Now, emotionally, it's going to be difficult to walk away from these investments because a few months prior, they were worth more. And so you're thinking, shoot, I should have done this a few months ago, or shoot, if I knew what the next few months were going to hold, that might cause me to make changes to how I want to approach this now. But we don't know that. We couldn't tell the future in the past, and we can't tell the future now. It's more about how do you understand when you need these funds and what's the best thing to do with them today. Because the next consideration is this. It's understand the range of potential outcomes. So over the past 50 years, and this source is Dimensional Fund Advisors, if you look at the best and worst one-year returns on the stock market as a whole versus a more balanced portfolio, you can start to understand why this matters. So for example, the S&P 500, over the last 50 years, its best one-year return. So this isn't best calendar year, this is literally best one-year return. So even looking at starting intra years, it was up 61%. That was starting July of 1982. So had you invested money July of 1982 in the S&P 500, 1 year later, those dollars were up 61%. That's a pretty incredible one-year return. In fact, it's the best one-year return in the S&P 500 over the past 50 years. Now, the worst one-year return in the S&P 500, it was down 43%, and that was starting on March of 2008. So from March of 2008 until March of 2009, the S&P 500 lost 43% of its value over those 12 months. So as you can see, in a short period of time, so 1 year in this instance, there's a very wide range of potential outcomes. You can be up as much as 61%, down as much as 43%, and that's just in the last 50 years. That's not saying it couldn't be higher or lower going forward. That's just using the last 50 years as a reference point. Now, compare that to a more balanced portfolio that's 40% stocks, 60% bonds, and those stocks are diversified into multiple different types of stocks, not just large companies like the S&P 500 is. When you look at the range of outcomes there, the best one-year return, the portfolio did 34%. In the worst one-year return, the portfolio was down 27%. So you start to understand the trade-offs here. When you're in an all-stock portfolio like the S&P 500, really high highs, really low lows, when you're looking at the range of expected returns over any 12-month time period, as you start to diversify that and have it be a more conservative or balanced portfolio, what you're going to get is a lower average return, but you're also going to get a narrower expected range of outcomes. Your best case scenario won't be as good, but your worst case scenario won't be as bad. That's at the one-year mark. Now, what happens if we extend that to 5 years? What's the best and worst five-year return of these two different portfolios? So for the S&P 500, the best ever five-year return it's ever had was a 29.7% average annualized return over that five-year time period. The worst five-year experience it's ever had was being down 6.6%, which is a cumulative return of almost negative 30%, but an average annual negative return of 6.6. So as you start to see, as you extend the time horizon, the best, at least on an average annual return basis, isn't going to be quite as high, but the worst also isn't going to be as bad. Now, if we do the five-year rolling returns with the balanced portfolio, that's 40% diversified stocks, 60% bonds, the best five-year return it's ever had on an annual basis was about 20% per year. The worst was plus 0.5% per year. So this is really important to note, because when we talk about investing, it's not the decision between do I stay in cash or go all into the stock market. You can start to see here where a conservative to balanced portfolio over the rolling five-year time periods in the last 50 years, even the worst case scenario, it was up 0.5% per year for 5 years in a row. So when you start to look at this, when you start to look at college expenses, we have to understand time horizons. This also applies to retirement. This also applies to other goals. The unique thing about college is there's four distinct years in which you need that money. Whereas in retirement, you're looking at a 20, 30 plus year time horizon where you can draw from different places based upon how different asset classes are performing. Now, Sherry, for your particular portfolio, which I'm making the assumption is only 15% stocks and 85% bonds, that range of potential outcomes is going to narrow even more. It's more and more and more conservative, which means there's less of an average return you can expect each year. But the narrowness of that return, or the range of those returns, is also going to narrow, which as an investor, you kind of like. If you're trying to find something that works for a short time period, you're going to say, I'd happily give up the grand slam, the home run returns, in exchange for knowing I could get a little bit of growth, but I don't want to risk potentially losing a lot of money while I'm staying invested here. So how does this relate to Sherry's question? Well, when you're funding college expenses, really four separate time horizons in a way, depending on how granular you want to be when you look at this. For Sherry, the time horizon is now, or really a couple months from now. So some funds are needed now, some funds are needed in 1 year, some funds are needed in 2 years, and some funds are needed in 3 years. If you're listening to this, you may not have a child starting college this fall of 2022, but say it's 3 years out or 5 years out. If it's 5 years out, your time horizons are 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, and 8 years. That matters because you can get pretty granular and almost look at it to say, okay, is 1/4 of the account in something more conservative? Is 1/4 of the account in something more aggressive to maybe fund senior year, if the more conservative stuff is to fund freshman year, and then something in between for sophomore and junior year? Obviously, that something in between and how conservative you are and how aggressive you are is going to be a factor of how long until you need those funds and what's your comfort level with some of the ups and downs and some of the uncertainty of investing. But this is a really important way to look at it. For Sherry, for example, and this is not a recommendation, this depends on a lot of factors. This depends upon Sherry's risk tolerance, other sources of potential income or cash flow needed to supplement if needed potentially. But conceptually, could you do something where maybe you have a fourth of a portfolio in a money market type fund where you say, you know what, I'm just not willing to risk it for the next 12 months. We need tuition dollars here now. And I'd happily give up any of the potential returns in exchange for knowing that I have this year's tuition covered. Does a fourth of the balance go there? And for Sherry, it'd be a fourth of the balance because she almost has enough to fully fund 4 years of college based on how much is in the account and what that projected cost of college is. For someone who maybe only has, say, 50% of the cost of college in a 529 plan, and they were in the same exact situation, they may need to put as much as 50% of the account balance into something more conservative like a money market fund, because it would take 50% of the account balance to fully fund freshman year, because they have 2 years of college set aside. Half of that represents freshman year, half represents sophomore year, or it could be half represents junior year, half represents senior year, and they come up with other plans of funding freshman and sophomore year. So multiple ways to do it, and we'll work through this in just a second. But does it make sense conceptually to have something that's, say, a fourth and something very conservative like a money market fund? Maybe half of it in the next step up from that. So slightly more aggressive than that, maybe something not too dissimilar to what she has right now, that maybe funds something like sophomore and junior year, and then a fourth of it in something that's a little bit even more balanced, slightly more, I'm not going to even say aggressive because it wouldn't be aggressive, but slightly less conservative. Not a recommendation at all, but just kind of a way, a mental way of almost organizing your 529 plan is aligning the different investments with the particular years they might fund. Because if I need money in 2 months, I'm going to do something very different with that money than if I need that money in 3 years. So as you look at it that way, take the dollar value needed for year one, put that in something that aligns with your risk tolerance and your comfort level with how that money should be invested or not invested to be able to fund year one. Then do the same with year two, year three, year four, and that's a great place to start. So far, this is kind of the way that you might approach it if you fully have, or at least coming very close to having college fully funded by your existing 529 plan balance, or at least existing savings balance that's earmarked for college. But what if you don't have 100% of college already set aside in a savings account, and like Sherry, college is coming up for one of your children? Well, there's a couple things. If you are going to cash flow some of college, say you've got 50% set aside in a savings account, which could be a 529 plan or savings or investments or something, where you're saying these are funds that are earmarked for college, but the other 50%, you're going to try to cash flow. Well, what do you do when the market's down like it is right now, at least as of this recording? Do you bite the bullet and say, okay, we're just going to sell and pay for the first 2 years with depressed asset prices? You could, or you could say, okay, if we're going to be cash flowing anyways, do we maybe cash flow first and second year? What that does is it gives the funds that we have another couple of years to ride out the downturn in the market to hopefully be worth more. Obviously, there's no guarantee, but if you can align your investments in a way that maximizes probability of success, that's one way to approach it too. If you have to look at what's the total toolkit almost that you have to help fund college, maybe there's some money in 529 plan balances. Maybe there's some money that you're going to cash flow. Maybe there's some that's going to be student aid. Maybe there's some that's going to be grandparents or relatives also chipping in. What you're trying to do is it's almost like you have four buckets: freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year. Maybe more buckets in some cases and fewer buckets in others. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to say, what are the best sources to use to fill each of these buckets so we can most effectively fund college and not have to sell investments at the wrong time, ideally, or not have to be overly strapped for cash flow if we're trying to fund some years that way instead. Another thing you can think of is, what if you have one child approaching college now and you have another child that's maybe a few years behind them and you're still actively saving to the younger child's 529 plan? One thing you might look at is, instead of selling some of the 529 plan assets in your older child's account, the child that's approaching college now, and selling those assets at depressed prices, what if you simply stopped funding some of the younger child's 529 plan balance, redirected that cash flow, because that cash flow is not higher or lower because of the market, it's insulated, not insulated, but just separate from the market, so that cash flow is cash flow, redirect that to tuition payments for your older child. And yes, your younger child is not getting those added dollars now, but the nice thing about 529 plans is you can always shift balances within family at absolutely no cost or penalty. So maybe you cash flow more of the existing tuition expenses for your older child, which places less of a need on their 529 plan balance, which gives that 529 plan balance longer time to recover. And maybe you end up not fully using that 529 plan balance for their college expenses anymore. Well, the nice thing is then you can simply slide that down to the younger child's account. And what that does is it gives it more years to recover, and you're simply swapping the role that contributions versus assets are playing. You're using the contributions for the younger child to cash flow college now. You're using the assets of the older child are at lower prices because of the market downturn and shifting those into the younger child's account, or not even shifting them to their account, but almost just mentally earmarking them for the younger child, knowing that that's buying me more time for these assets to recover. So what we're doing is just a game of how do you use cash flow, or how do you use other assets, or how do you use different strategies to buy yourself more time so that you're not having to sell 529 plan assets at depressed prices if you don't have to. So at the end of the day, what you are doing, the game that you're playing, the strategy that you're implementing, try to think of each year of college as that different bucket, as I mentioned. The reason that's appropriate, or the reason that's important, is because when you look at different time horizons, each of those buckets has a different time horizon. And when you look at different ways that you could be invested, whether it's all stock or all cash or a mix of stock and bonds and cash, what that investing is doing is it's changing the average return you can expect from that portfolio, but it's also changing the range of potential returns that you can expect. And you can accept a larger range of potential outcomes the longer your time horizon, because the longer you give these investments to work, the more that range is going to narrow over time. But for investments you need soon, you can't really afford a wide range of potential outcomes. You can't really afford to have your investments fluctuate a whole lot. So that's why understanding how to be invested for different buckets is important, especially as you're getting closer to those college years. So I hope that was helpful. Sherry, thank you very much for your question. If you are listening and say, hey, this triggers a question that I have, whether it's about college or retirement or investing or taxes or whatever it is, I encourage all of you to submit those questions. I literally have a running list of questions, and thank you to all of you who submit those. What I try to do is see which of these topics are getting the most interest because they're similar questions and what fits best, and then decide each week, of course, to answer one of them. So Sherry, thank you for your question. For all of you, please submit your questions as well. Also, be sure to check us out on YouTube. I now have different YouTube channels. There's ones for the podcast. It's just called Ready for Retirement Now. So that is now its own separate YouTube channel where you can find this podcast. And then there's other content around creating a secure retirement, and that's under the company YouTube channel name. So Root Financial Partners. Be sure to check them both out. Be sure to leave a review. Be sure to share this with friends, family, coworkers, whoever you think might be able to benefit from it. And with that, I'll see you all next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Ready for Retirement podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and let me know by leaving a 5-star review. And as always, for a list of the notes and the resources mentioned in today's episode, you can find those at the Ready for Retirement website, which is readyforretirement.co. That's readyforretirement.co. And if you have a question that you would like for me to answer on a future episode, then you can also go to the Ready for Retirement website, readyforretirement.co. There's a page called Submit Your Question where you can submit a question for me to answer on a future episode. Thanks as always for listening, and I'll see you next time. Hey everyone, it's me again for the disclaimer. Please be smart about this. Before doing anything, please be sure to consult with your tax planner or financial planner. Nothing in this podcast should be construed as investment, tax, legal, or other financial advice. It is for informational purposes only.